Here we go. Okay. All right. So, can you hear me? Hear me? Okay. This mic is very sensitive. So, is that okay? Yeah. Okay. Okay. Here. Yeah, so I'm back here again. Last time I was here, I think it was about a year ago. And so I've had 1 year to think about my next Dhamma talk. anyways, just to reiterate where I'm from and who ordained me and things like that. I was ordained many years ago as a young man at the age of 25 as a fully ordained monk, which is Jayako just became a monk a couple of weeks ago. So what you do is you have a couple of years training, you wear white, you become a novice, and then you become a monk. So that happened, I think, that's about 14 years ago. And so my training started off with Ajahn Brahm, and I stayed with him for about 7 years. And then 7 years I moved off to Sydney to stay with Ajahn Kemavaro in Wiseman's Ferry, Wat Buddhadhamma. And then I moved back to... And then I think from time to time I came back to Perth for the rains retreat. And then after the 5 years I decided to move back to Perth for good. And yeah, so things are, you know, so as a monk, your life evolves and things change and your brain starts to think differently. So for the first, you could say, 13 years of my life, I was just living as any other monk in a monastery, who's been trained by Ajahn Brahm. So when you're living in a monastery, you have like the teacher and he teaches you and you're just one of the other monks, just trying to live life as a monk, keeping the rules, meditating as much as possible, making merit, living with each other in harmony. So I was doing that for about, I think, 13 years. And then I was like getting a little bit bored. I was getting a little bit bored with it, so I decided to go and help out the temple in Kelmscott, Dhanayanaram, which is the monastery, and which was started by the Cambodian people, and which is a part of the CBSWA. So I got to the point of my monastic life where I felt that I needed to go and serve more the lay people, because for the first many years of my life, all I did was just serve the monastery, and yeah, that's all you basically did, you know. In the monastery, you wake up in the morning, you have to do work, and you do your work, and then in the afternoons, you just go back to your rooms, you study, you meditate, you waste time. And that's what the life of a monk is for a very long time. And yeah, like I said, it got to a point where I had to make a little bit of a change. And I thought just giving myself more to the people who actually supported me was going to be a change which was going to be better for my monastic practice. And, you know, as, you know, monks, we're just sitting up here. All we're doing is giving advice to people. Yeah? That's all it is. Just advice. And a lot of people, they just want to know how to be just a little bit happier. And we give advice through, you know, the Buddhist teachings. I think Nito was here last week and he talked about the sevenfold path. And I don't know who was here the week before. Ajahn Brahm. And you know what Ajahn Brahm's about. A lot of jokes, a lot of stories. And for me, I've been doing a little bit of teaching, but most of it's been on meditation, because we have a class every Monday night. So I haven't actually practiced in giving Dhamma talks. But, you know, like I said before, it was all we're doing is basically giving you advice. And people want to live a life. You know, I see a lot of people, and people want to live a life which they have like a sense of more happiness, really. Yeah, that's all we're really after coming here. And we've searched the material world for happiness, academics, and things like that. And have we really found it? And then maybe not, maybe you have. So you come here and you ask the monks, how can we become a little bit more happier in life? And just learning over the years, a lot of our happiness comes from ourselves. And that's the main thing that's been playing on my mind for, you know, the last, couple of months, when people would come up to me and talk to me about the Dhamma and about practice. And I always tell them that your happiness is your own creation. Your own creation, and you have to like look inwards and see what is happening in your mind. And you can start to see that a lot of our suffering or a lot of our problems comes from within our minds. And a good example is when we don't like somebody. We don't like somebody, they may say something to us which, you know, makes us upset. And we just carry that around with us. And that, you know, that thought or that idea that they've triggered in our minds, they only said it once, but we carry it in our minds and we actually make like a bigger story out of it. And then we start to find fault with that person, or and then the dislike towards that person just gets stronger and stronger. And then after a while you start to realize, when you look at it carefully, you know, the suffering is not actually coming from that person and what that person said, because of what that person said, they said that a long, long time ago, and they probably didn't even mean it to hurt you, but because the storyline that you made up in your mind has created that negativity, that's why you dislike that person. So you can start to see that these problems and negativity, they start from within our minds. Yeah. We create our problems. And once you start to realize that, I think you can start to learn how to let go of it. And to understand, you know, the teachings of impermanence. You know, things never last. You know, this ill feeling that we may have, this negativity that we have to this person or a situation, it doesn't last. One day, you know, we will be free of that negativity. And once that negativity, like, disappears, what is left in your mind? And usually, you know, life as human beings, we're unhappy, we're happy. We're unhappy, we're happy. So when the negativity disappears, we're happy again. Yeah? And why are we happy? It's because of the absence of the thoughts of negativity. And so we start to learn. That's another important thing, you know, with this path of like Buddhism and self-development, is that we have to learn ourselves from our own experience, and from those experiences we can make the right adjustments to create a happier life for ourselves. So yeah, you know, you get to the point where you know, life starts to become a lot easier to live. Like, honestly, You can live a life where, because you know how to let go and not hold on to things, life can be, you know, very smooth for a very long time without too many problems. And, you know, that just comes from just being able to look within and just to see that the main problems that we have in our lives is because we create those problems ourselves. And that's very hard to, it's easy to talk about, but when it comes to like practicing it, it's a whole completely different story. And it's sort of, we try to, you know, as human beings, we try to create more happiness in our lives. And one of the things that we can sort of do is to be more like generous and more giving when it comes to treating one another as human beings. And this idea of making making good karma is also something which, as people, we can start to think about. And I remember many years ago when I was just hanging out here outside the building, and one of the lay supporters who have been helping out the monks for many years, he said something that I would remember for a very long time. And he said, what did he say? He said that, "I believe that making good karma brings happiness to my life." And, you know, when he said that, because, you know, he said it, but I also knew him as a person, and he's been serving the monks for many years. And when you look at him, at his body language, the way he talks, you can see that he's a very nice man and that he's quite a happy man. And when he said something like, you know, making good karma does bring happiness gave me happiness in my life, I believed him, yeah? Because he was like, you could actually see it in him, and he was like, the proof is like in the pudding. So, yeah. And, yeah, so, and then, we just carry on with life. We have to wake up in the morning. And you know, the Buddhist practice talks about many different aspects that we can work on in our lives, the way we talk to one another. That's very important. And also just recently is like giving support. Like I was in a monastery and just people just going through difficult times. And you just learn that there are times in our lives where we have to give each other support. And there was this, you know, people just going through a hard time. And all they need is a little bit of care. A little bit of care, a little bit of attention, and, you know, a little bit of help. And that does make a big difference to people's lives. It makes them, because sometimes people, they sort of find themselves in situations where they can't really do what they want to do. So when we have the opportunity to help them, then we help them. And that's the meaning of living a life which will bring us more happiness. And bringing more happiness in our lives, if you look at it, how can you live your life? You can live your life in terms of, you know, being like negative or just being caught up in your anxieties, or you can live a life where you're free of all that. You can live a life where happiness really means that you live a life as a person who doesn't really think too much. Because thinking takes away so much of our happiness. And like before I came here, we were having solar installed in the monastery, and the committee asked me if I could get the roof tiles cleaned. And the roof of this building is so old, and we didn't know how old it was, so I got the boys, because as Abbot you don't do any work, so you just get the boys to do it. So I got the boys, right? Just get up there, and we had one of the supporters bought us a high water pressure cleaner, and then so we had to work in the morning, so I had to get them to work in the afternoon as well, because we just found out that the guys are coming in to install it on Tuesday. So I thought, yeah, it's better to get it clean now. So then we just get that job out the way. And then we got everything ready, and John was going to come in to pick me up to come here tonight to give a Dhamma talk. And so we got on the roof, and so it was an easy job. Just get up on the roof, high pressure hose, clean everything down, and it's done. Maybe a couple of hours and it's finished. But as the boys got into the roof, one step, two step, crack. The tiles broke. And then we're like, okay, we've learned a lesson. We don't walk in the middle of the tile because it will break. We just walk on the edges. So they start walking on the edges. But then when you're on the roof, it's on an angle, you know. So it's very hard to walk in a straight line. You have to try to keep your balance. So one of the boys, he was on the other side of the roof, and then there was another crack. Crack! And I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to go teaching Dhammaloka, and there's all these problems arising with his roof, and the rain's coming in, and everything's going to leak, and people are not going to be happy. What am I going to do? So we're like, and then the guys are going to come in on Tuesday, so we're like, oh, what do we do? So you just have to quickly go into like problem solving mode. And it's true, you know, being a monk for a long time, being able to meditate, like, you know, I'm not like crazy good like meditator like Ajahn Brahm, but you know how to meditate over the years. Your mind is, you know, brighter, sharper, and that leads to having more of an ability to problem solve and having a mind which is more, you know, agile in a sense. So meditation does help in that way. So we quickly solve the problem. We quickly solve the problem. And then, yeah, we solve the problem. So solar guys are not going to come in until we are ready. So the next couple of days, they've got to find some old roof tiles to replace the broken ones. And then we'll just take it easy and do things steadily and get the roof ready instead of trying to rush things. And that got done. And then coming here. And then, you know, it's like some people, they can worry about that, right? They can think, oh, the roof, the tiles are cracked. Oh, it could rain, and I'm thinking so much, my hair's falling out. Oh, my hairs are turning white because I'm overthinking. And you know, what does this thinking do for you? Does it make you any more happier? No, it doesn't. So what do? You just use the, what is it? We're in Australia, right? WA, she'll be right. If it rains and it pours and the whole ceiling falls down, no, it doesn't matter, we have insurance. That'll fix the problem. But no. So what we did was we just patched it up, everything's okay, and then you just forget about it. You just come here, living in the moment, and that's how we live life. As a monk, just living in the moment. If we weren't able to do that, then we'll just end up, you know, taking away a lot of our happiness. And Ajahn Brahm, prime example, You know, people go, oh, he's so happy, Ajahn Brahm, so jolly. And he's got so many things to do, right? And if he wasn't able to let go and live in the moment, all that energy and all that happiness will be just zapped away. And, you know, when it just continue to talk about happiness is this, like higher states of energy within the mind. And just going on the same line of thought is the more you think, the more energy you use up in your mind. And the less you think, the more energy you have in your mind. That's why when you think about these, you don't need to talk about the really deep states of meditation, but just peaceful, calm meditations, your mind is fairly still. And you can actually start to feel the mind just having more energy and more oomph behind it. And, you know, a bright mind is a happy mind. And this is one of the ways we can create it, is by just having an ability to, you know, this word has been used a lot, but to let go. To, you know, really let go and not allowing other people to take away our happiness. Even as monks, you know, we get criticized. You know, we sit up here and we give a talk. Oh, it's a bad talk. Oh, am I going to be heard about it? No, I'm not going to be heard about it. Why am I going to allow other people's criticisms to take away my happiness? And, you know, that's what it is. One of these things in life, when we think about it, is trying to let go and not allow, you know, Ajahn Brahm says this all the time, which is very true, is not allow anybody to take away your happiness. So you do what you can to protect it, yeah? To protect that happiness. And you could say, you know, our happiness can be taken away because our mind moves to the past or moves on to the future. So in one way to protect it is to live more mindfully in the moment. And that's the teaching that, you know, comes from the Buddha, is to live mindfully in this moment. And also another teaching that you could say that comes from the Buddha is this, right effort, putting a certain type of effort into your life. Yeah? Do you wake up and are you the type of person who puts the grumpy type of effort into your life when you wake up in the morning? Or you're the type of person when you wake up, you put the effort of being motivated, doing something for yourself, doing something good, or you're just putting that effort of just being a more positive person in this world. And that's from the Buddha's teachings, this idea of right effort, like actually adding that happiness to your life. I sort of like, I used to be a chef. Boring. I used to be a chef. I used to know how to cook a mean steak. Come on, guys. But, you know, you sort of like try to use ideas and experiences to teach people about the Dhamma in certain ways and like cooking a steak or maybe eggplant for you vegetarians out there. And so like if you're cooking something, right? Like broccoli. You just steam it or boil it, and then if you eat it, is it going to be tasty? Or if you steam it and boil it and add a bit of salt. Maybe if you're Sri Lankan, a bit of spice. Maybe if you're Asian, a bit of chili. Just adding that little bit to a very plain vegetable can make it amazing, right? Yes. That's why. And it's the same in life. Sometimes life, oh, we wake up in the morning, it's Monday, it's Tuesday, it's Wednesday, it's Thursday, Friday. It's all the same, isn't it? I'm pretty sure, like, I was at my mum's house on Mondays, on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, and it was all the same. Sometimes as monks, we sort of look out and just wonder what beautiful and wonderful lives you guys have. But I'm pretty sure it's pretty much the same. One day, sort of like, it's sort of, you know, this idea of having days of the week is a big illusion. It's just one day after another, after another, after another. So life can become a little bit plain and a bit ordinary, like a piece of broccoli that hasn't been seasoned properly. Hasn't been seasoned properly. So what do? We just season it. And what does seasoning take? A little bit of effort. Because you need it like broccoli, season. So just a little bit of effort. But that's, and you just add that into your life. Add a little bit of happiness into your life. A little bit of joy, a little bit of care, compassion, a little bit of metta. You know, loving kindness. You add a little bit into your life. And that's all you got to do. It's just a little bit of effort. It takes a little bit of effort, actually. Because it is true, you know, in life. Sometimes we just don't feel like doing anything. Yeah? It's like, oh, a bit depressed today. It's like, then like, I'm a monk, I gotta be like happy and I gotta be chatty and I gotta, you know, put on a proper face because you're a monk. But sometimes you just don't feel like doing that, and that's perfectly fine. You can be normal, you can be moody, and that's okay. That's normal. And what do you do in a situation like that? I have no idea. Season it. No. What do you do in a situation like that? You just embrace it. That's all you do. The idea of, you know, like you could say the idea of like metta, loving kindness, is always like directed to other people. But also you like direct it to yourself as well. And sometimes we find ourselves in these moods. And we can't do anything about it. And, you know, we're too tough on ourselves. We have high expectations. And we think we're human beings and we have to be, like, the same all the time. But that's not the case. We have various different things which are happening which causes us to feel a certain way. And when we're moody, okay, we're moody. We just accept it. And we have to understand that things change all the time. Change. Just having Ajahn Chah always talk about change. Like the idea of, he would say, like, mainai, which is basically things being uncertain. And just having, he just like always talked about that all the time. And you could say that from like, you know, the idea, you know, from the Buddhist text is like impermanence. Things don't last forever. And this idea of just understanding that things change. It's like a more of like a wisdom practice. It's not more of like, you know, like emotional loving kindness, adding happiness to your life, but understanding things change is coming from a place where you can like use it to understand this world. And what happens when you start to understand the changeability of the world is that you learn how to adapt to situations very quickly. And being able to adapt makes you more flexible, makes you more easygoing, and makes you more like a person who's easily, you can work with, yeah? Just having this ability to understand that change always happens. If you're a person who wants things a certain way, and when things change, you get upset. So it's like having more of a controlling, or more of a set mind. And with that kind of mind, you're gonna just only thing that you're gonna get is more suffering, yeah, more difficulties in your life. Yes. So just having that, just like impermanence, things are always changing. It's like just the last couple of days in the monastery, this change and that change and this change and. And you just go with it. Yeah, one of the monks, he's going off to Queensland, right? Because he's one of the Cambodian elders. He's a monk who passed away, so this Cambodian monk from where I'm staying is going over there to show support. And we were just living our lives, and then this change happened. So what do? You just go with it. And then they book the flights, and they book the wrong one. So what do? You can get upset because things change. So you just work with it, solve it, and then move on. And then things change, but if you learn how to adapt, things will be okay. And today, interesting enough, I was thinking, oh, because sometimes when you're trying to teach, you sort of like the way I teach. I don't like study or anything like that, right? So, who likes to study? No, there's people out there who love to study. I shouldn't say that. Bad monk, and it's like the idea of like. It's like looking at somebody's socks. Funny enough, I was waiting in line for people to put food in my bowl in the monastery, and I was just looking down. You know, we look down as monks, we don't really. And then I was looking at somebody's socks. And I had this great idea on how to explain Dhamma by just looking at socks. But now I forgot. No, I know it, but I just have to like put it into words. So if you have a look at socks, right? Socks will fit a foot from size 2 to 8, right? 2 to 8? Or what's the other size? 8 to 12? Yeah. Because to be flexible in life, you have to be able to learn how to fit like a sock. That sounds pretty wide, doesn't it? Because any situation could be a size 4, a size 5, a size 6, a size 10. But if you're a sock and you can stretch, and you can be movable, you can fit into any situation because you're flexible. so be like a sock. Yeah? I thought that was like kind of cool because because if you had like one sock that only fit one size foot, then there will be a lot of problems in this world. So I think the idea was to be able to like just be flexible and to be flexible so you can fit into the situations that life throws at you. Yeah? And it's the ones who are flexible, they're the ones that are more happier. And that's true. The ones who are inflexible, tight and rigid, I don't see them smiling very often. Okay. All right. So yeah. That's what I've learned over the past few months living in Dhyanayanaram Monastery and actually taking like, you know, I don't really like to say it, but taking a role as one of just the monk leading the community of other monks and the people who are coming here, coming into like, you know, practice and wanting to learn Dhamma. And we have a small community at the moment. There's myself, Janarato, Sukakamo, Rob, who is becoming a monk, and Jan, who's German, and he's staying with us until October. And just living together, we see each other every day. And yeah, you see each other every day. I didn't even crack a joke and you laughed. So we see each other every day and we have to learn how to live with each other. And a lot of like the success of living in a small community, you can contribute that to the Buddhist teachings of very basic, just like being kind, living in harmony, not controlling one another, and also having an understanding. I think that's one of the important things, is having an understanding what you're, you know, trying to create in a place. And if I had the wrong understanding, I would treat people, I think, incorrectly. But understand, you know, this place is a place for practice. It's a monastery. So that's how you set up a place and that's how you treat people. So in a place like that, you have to learn how to give people, you know, give them their time to work on their own minds and to practice. But at the same time, because we are living in a place where we don't own it, And people are very generous when it comes to like looking after us. So we have to, in a sense, develop a sense of responsibility when we're living in a place. So with that sense of being a responsible monk, then the way we give back to the community like that is to look after it the best we can. And also look after the people that come and feed us every day the best we can. And also, importantly, is to look after each other, you know, the best we can. And, yeah, you know, we just, what you're going to do is just, like, give people space. Don't be critical. Don't be controlling. And that creates a very, very nice, like, environment for people to live in. And obviously, most of you have families, relationships, and things like that. If you can just take that idea of just like giving people space, not being controlling, allowing people to be, and understand, you know, the situation that you're in, then you'll be able to create, you know, something good. And like, you know, you should come visit us. Now it's time to promote the place, eh? You should come visit us. I always tell people, right, after I give the blessing, the restaurant is open. It's all you can eat. So you want to come along and check it out? And it's, yeah, nice place. Nice place, yes, very nice place. And I think last year, another reason why I'm there is also to help develop another project, which has been started by the BSWA, and we sort of like kept it under the radar, because that's how I like to do things, under the radar. I always like this saying from Ajahn Chah, if you make good soup, if you make good soup, make sure you season it. No, that's what I said. If you make good soup, people will come. So that's the motto that I'm living by. So I'm just doing things quietly, and we're just working over on Stocker Road. It's you got Stocker Road here and you got Scott Road here. Stocker Road is like 26 acres, bush, very nice. It's beautiful, you know. So the BSWA purchased it, I think last year, and we've been working on it to try to get council approval for this and that, so that we can start renovating the stables. And the main reason why Ajahn Brahm did that was because you all understand that Bodhinyana Monastery is becoming too full. Coming too full. And Ajahn Brahm's stomach is also becoming too full. And he's... and my stomach is also becoming too full. So he said, it's like the timing was right, so he bought the property. And his idea was to work together with the CBSWA, because their intentions was to establish a monastery on their side. And Ajahn Brahm's intention is to just build accommodation for monks to stay in. And then we're trying to, you know, work together as one. And yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. And we haven't been working that hard over the past 7 months on this project, because a lot of it is like a lot of paperwork and there's a lot of waiting. But it looks promising because a lot of things are getting approved. We're going to get the water connected, because there's no water on the property, and electricity needs to be fixed. And it looks like we are going to get the 90% we're going to get the building approval for the renovations. So things are looking very promising. And then hopefully we can have a place where people can go and learn about the Dhamma and go to a different place and just to experience what the place, you know, feels like. Because, you know, wherever you go, whichever monastery you go to, there's a different feeling to the place. You go to Dhammasara, even though Dhammasara is a monastery. Ajahn Brahm's a teacher, but it's not the same. It's different. When you go to Bodhinyana, you know, it's different as well. When you go to 56 Scott Road, it's definitely different. It's definitely different, yes. And yeah, we're just monks, just trying to live simply, and just taking things one day at a time. And that's a nice teaching as well, you know, taking things one day at a time, and not looking too far into the future, because the truth is we don't really know what is going to happen. And sometimes we think too far in the future, It just takes away from like, I like to like let people know that the more that you can live in the present, the more you can enjoy what life has to offer. Yeah, what life has to offer. And I was actually telling somebody, and I actually forgot, but I'll remember. It's like, you know, as people we look for happiness. Mm-hmm. And so we come to this temple looking for happiness. We, you know, buy a car looking for happiness. Go to on a holiday and things like that. And that's one way of finding it. And that's one way of enjoying life. But if you learn how to, like, develop a happy attitude towards life, live more positively, then whatever you do becomes enjoyable. And it's true. Like, we sometimes, as what I'm trying to say is, we look for happiness in material things on holidays. We're looking for happiness, but how are we feeling now? Are we really happy? No, that's why we're looking for it. But if we have like an attitude of happiness or just like living life happily, then whatever we do, we can find some sort of enjoyment and happiness in it. It is sort of like, just like the simple things in life can bring you happiness. Just being alive. You know, being alive is a happy thing. if you just know how to feel it, just know how to be, and just learning how to like develop it is a very important thing. It's sort of like when you look at developing the mind in meditation, you could sort of say that you're using those same skills to develop happiness, like in the world. And the one thing you learn about meditation and the mind is like negativity in general that zaps a lot of happiness, and a lack of negativity that brings you just so much freedom in life, like a real sense of freedom, like a mind which is, you know, clear. A mind that doesn't worry. And sometimes, you know, it's not being irresponsible or not being serious about life, but it's just knowing when to exercise the mind or when to just allow the mind to be just clear and receptive and living in the moment. Those are, you know, like skillful things that we can develop as human beings, because yes, I understand, in life we have to use our minds, we have to work, we have to do this, we have to do that. But there is a time where we can just stop that and just be with life, be in the moment, be clear, and just having this, yeah, and just having a clearer mind, a more energetic mind, which brings not a little, but a lot. And remember, be like a sock. Be flexible, size 2 to 8. And just learn how to fit into life in whatever situation you're in. And a sock doesn't discriminate. He goes on Asian feet, yellow feet, white feet, everything feet, accepts everything, yeah? Okay, done. Any burning questions? Any questions from the floor? Do we go on the iPad first? Any questions from the floor? Oh, we have a Monday meditation class. It's in Kelmscott, 7 to 8. And I've also been starting to do like half-day meditation retreats on Saturdays as well. So you can see that on the internet, on the BSWA website. So yeah. So you come along and have a look at our junk pile. Okay, questions? No questions, okay. Finish, let's go. Okay. Are you at peace all the time? How do you feel the peace when you want to watch your mind and the mind is not at peace? How do you watch peacefully when your mind is not? So first of all, we break up the question. Are you at peace all the time? No, I'm not at peace all the time. Simple question, simple answer. How do you feel peace when you want to watch your mind and the mind is not at peace? So basically, what's happening here is there's two separate things happening. There is whatever's happening in your mind and how you watch it. It's like the driver and the scenery the driver sees. So it's how you're driving that car. Are you driving it aggressively? Are you driving it peacefully? So this is what I mean when I say when you're doing things peacefully and calmly. It's how you're driving the situation. How do you watch peacefully when your mind is not? That's pretty much the same answer. Yeah. And then what happens is it is true, you know, Ajahn Brahm says that you make peace, you be calm, you be gentle. And what you're actually doing is you're putting the causes into your mind. Yeah. It's like you're peaceful, you know, you're being calm, you're being gentle, right? You know how that feels. But the mind can be all over the place. But you have that right attitude. And what I tell people is when that mind is all over the place, when it disappears, what do you have left? You have peace, you have kind, you have gentleness. Why? It's because that's the attitude that you're bringing in to the meditation practice or into life. That's the way you've been driving. Okay. When I dislike a person and they trigger anger in me, I usually find a way to avoid them or get some distance. Do you think this is a fair approach? I think everybody got their own way to deal with people who triggers anger in them. People are on different levels. If you have a person who's like highly attained spiritually, then they'll just let it go. It doesn't bother them. But if you're a person, everyday like me, everyday person, then, you know, these things really have an impact on you. So sometimes I think it's always good to just step away from that situation and just allow your mind to calm down. But the one thing, I think the one trap that people fall into is they hold a grudge and they start to dislike that person forever. So I think that's one of the problems when you fall into this kind of situation is that you start to hate that person. You don't want to talk to them. You don't want to look at them. You don't want to even give them a chance. So I think as a Buddhist, you know, we're trying to be compassionate. We're trying to be wise. We're trying to be kind. We give people a chance. So when everything's calmed down, when this, you know, the drama's over, just talk to that person again. See if you can have a normal conversation. Because sometimes when they, you know, they said something to make you angry, they probably didn't mean it, or maybe it's the way they speak. But you can sort of tell how a person feels about you when you talk to them again. And if they're holding a grudge or things aren't right, then, you know, it's okay to step back. Because, you know, monks... It's a great example. Monks, we run away from everything. We run away from the world. We're living in a monastery because we have our reasons. And you too can run away from the people that really hurt you. Yeah? And just live your own life. Okay. Question from friends. Ajahn Brahm teaches that happiness depends on how much suffering you had before it ceases. Does it mean that you can't have happiness unless you suffer? And that the more you suffer, the happier you will be when the suffering has ceased. Okay, Ajahn Brahm teaches that happiness depends on how much suffering you had. I think, to notice happiness and suffering, you have to sort of notice what suffering is in order to understand what happiness is. And does it mean that you can't have happiness unless you suffer? You can't escape both, to be honest. In this life, we have a bit of both. We have suffering, we have happiness. Some people suffer more, some people are more happier than others. But this path of like development and practice is to develop a life which is more wholesome, brings more happiness, brings more, you know, more joy, and you know those wonderful, beautiful things that you hear about. And the more you do that, the less suffering that you have. And I think Ajahn Brahm once said that, you know, you can live life and be happy 90% of the time. So life is not all about equal amounts of suffering and equal amounts of happiness. And it is true when you look at the world. There are people out there who are more happier than others, and there are other people who suffer more than others. And that's just the way life is. But as you know, as a Buddhist or people who want to learn, we just develop our minds and just work towards more like positivity and things like that. Okay. Any more questions? No? Oh. Eddie.
Sorry.
No, not too near, okay? Yeah. Ajahn Santuti.
Yes.
Thanks for the really, really, really wonderful deep talk.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Are you sure?
Yes. You have sort of, in your short talk, you have covered, you know, I would say the heart of the Buddha's teaching, okay, in a simplified way, you know. Okay, yeah.
Yes.
What came to my mind was, you know, in religions, the kingdom of heaven lies within, you know, the things in. And the Buddha has given us so much tools, you know, and how to look inside us, you know, okay, to make ourselves happy, you know, ending of suffering.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And then, like, I mean, in your talk, you so much emphasize on it, I think. And I also was thinking of the world scene, you know, the world scene. We are living now in such a frightening, you know, chaotic situation, you know.
Yeah.
Whereby countries, in order to make yourself great, you have to pull people down. You do, you know, all it.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So if they can sort of look down a little bit inwards, you know, okay?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and then, well, to make, the world situation much better.
Yes, yes. Thank you, Eddie, for your comments. Benito? Okay, finish.